Welcome back to Think Tank. After almost 9 months away, we are back with a new series with a whole new sound. This series is all about your life stories. Something meaningful, something defining, something you want to share. Series 2 has taken months of planning and production, and we are still working hard. If you want to tell your story on this show, visit our new website, thinktankpod.com/story. In this series, we have a plethora of fascinating, inspirational stories. I have learned so much hearing these guests talk, and I hope you do too. This is episode 1, Time for Change.
Their face was out of view. They were unidentifiable.
And naturally, I couldn't just stand up and watch them doing it.
They said the waiting list could take anything from months to years.
Why do I thank people for making me feel so small?
After something like this, you spend a long time trying to find your feet and find out who you are again.
We need to care so much more about each other.
But this will only get worse if we don't act on it now, on it now, on it now.
She actually stood by me, protecting
there
me.
There needs to be something, someone, or all of us can help change that one way or another.
This is my story.
Welcome to Think Tank.
What about PC Keith Palmer? Not terrorism, was it? Was it not terrorism? You're all the same. You're all appeasers. You're all supporters of terrorism. Shame on you all. And shame on anyone who has turned up here tonight.
That was a clip recorded at a safe space discussion in Caerphilly in Wales. It was an event open to the public to ask questions about the Islam faith, and it was disrupted by a man you can hear shouting, calling everyone a terrorist. 80,393. That's the number of hate crimes recorded by police in England and Wales in 2016-17. That's an increase of 29% compared with 2015-16. 78% of these recorded were race hate crimes. 7% were religious hate crimes. Hate crime is on the rise, and it has been for a long time. 2016-17 saw almost 6,000 religion-targeted hate crimes, compared with just 1,618 in 2011-12. Events such as the EU referendum and Westminster Bridge terrorist attack saw huge surges in hate crimes last year. This episode's story comes from Sahar Al-Faifi. She's a Muslim woman and Islamophobia campaigner, amongst many things. I've never experienced hate crime. To be honest, I've never really been a victim of any sort of serious crime. Sahar talks honestly and openly about her experiences and the work she does to combat hate crime, as well as her advice to those who are victims of it. Here's Sahar's story.
I'm Sahar Al-Faifi. I am a graduate in genetics from Cardiff University. So I am a Muslim woman who chose to wear the face veil out of conviction of faith. For me, this is an act of worship and a mean for me to get closer to God by following his instructions that were revealed in the holy book of Quran. I follow the Muslim faith or the Islamic faith. The Islamic faith is one of the Abrahamic faiths, and we believe in the same God as the Christianity or Christians do and the Jews do, and so on. There is a lot of commonalities between Islam, Christianity and Judaism. We do believe in all the prophets, including Moses, Jesus, and Prophet Muhammad. So this is the faith that I am following. And because of the Islamic manifestation that I chose to take, which is wearing the face veil, I have been a target for many Islamophobic abuse, so much so that I don't know what life is like without it. And it's very sad, especially that I see these incidents taking place in my city, the beautiful city of Cardiff, where I studied and where I spent most of my life. I remember that I was doing an interview with the BBC Wales, and during the interview, someone passed by, looked fearlessly at the camera and called me, "You're an F-word bomber." So this is what happened in the front of the camera. You could imagine what could actually happen behind it. And it's very sad because I am, in fact, a molecular geneticist by profession. I work in cancer diagnostic lab within the NHS, which is the public health service in Britain, something that I am really, really proud of. You know, yet there are some people who sees me as a bomber, as a terrorist and so on. And, you know, these incidents doesn't only happen in one place. You know, it's not like just during the night. It could happen anywhere, really. I face this incident even by the hospital where I work, in the city centre, sometimes by patients and so on. Another incident that I have faced, in fact, and it's by the local hospital here, is Heath Hospital. And I remember that I saw two teenagers were trying to steal bikes from the hospital site. And naturally, I couldn't just stand up and watch them doing it. So I stood against them, telling them, "Leave the bikes." Immediately, instantly, they started calling me names and "go back to your country," and F-word, Quran, F-word, Muslims and so on. Luckily, one of my lab colleagues was passing by and she witnessed the incident and she actually stood by me, protecting me from these two teenagers. And she stayed with me until the police officers came to take statements and so on. So although the picture is dark and gloomy, there is always hope. I mean, this lab colleague, I will never forget the fact that she actually stayed with me and you know, protected me. And there were many other positive incidents. But the truth is that Islamophobic abuse are actually on rise and is not against me only, especially after Brexit. You know, Islamophobia, it is the new racism and it has become, unfortunately, normalized. And after Brexit is actually getting worse because now is going beyond targeting the Muslim community to target other minorities like the Polish community in Cardiff. And it's really sad because I truly believe that we should, in Britain, celebrate our multiculturalism, our diversity. We should be confident within our identity, regardless your faith or background or sexual orientation. And I truly believe that what Muslims are facing today is exactly what the Jews faced yesterday. And God knows who can be the next group. And that's why I feel it's a collective responsibility for all of us. But this is actually what drove me to follow my passion of justice, equality, diversity and inclusivity for all. And now, beside my job as molecular geneticist, I am an anti-Islamophobia campaigner. And I feel that this is actually the best time for it. We have seen Trump being elected. We have seen him appointing a far-right white supremacist as a strategic advisor. Here in Britain, we have seen many politicians from across the political spectrum stating negative comments against Muslims. We have seen the tabloid in Britain demonizing different minorities, not only Muslims, but single moms, LGBT, feminist, black, and so on. And it's quite disheartening to see. At the same time, we've got to appreciate that actually there is a problem and need to be tackled. And you will be surprised that some people wouldn't even recognize Islamophobia as a term. And they believe that actually Islam and Muslims are inherently evil, and you blaming the Muslims for everything that takes place. And it's sad to see. At the same time, we have to appreciate that actually it exists. And I always think that Islamophobia must not be reduced to attacks to street Islamophobia can be institutionalized. For example, when certain minorities who happen to be Muslims in today's case are marginalized from the civic and public life, it's a form, it's a manifestation of Islamophobia. In Britain, we believe that everyone is equal citizen. Everyone should have equal access to politics, education, sport, music, and so on. Yet Muslims and other minorities, generally speaking, are way, way underrepresented, both in politics and media. And we don't have people who can actually speak on our behalf and shape the narrative around us, and let alone Muslim women. I mean, how many, you know, media platforms invite Muslim women to speak on her behalf? I mean, I will be just speaking about my experience as a veiled Muslim woman. I have faced countless asks for me to come and speak about my views in the media and so on. And I always say that this face veil should not be used as a polarizing tool to divide people, because this is exactly what the far right and ISIS equally want, is to for us as a society to become exclusivist in our approach, to not accept people the way they are. And also, it's almost every 2 years MPs come and talk about Muslim women and what they should wear and what they shouldn't, you know, distracting the public from the more important issues that we are facing in terms, for example, social housing, tuition fees and unemployment and poverty. These are the issues that need to be discussed in Westminster, not this piece of fabric that I chose to wear. But it's almost acceptable to do almost once every 2 years. And I have become like ready for this. And it shouldn't be the case. I shouldn't be in a position to defend my right, to defend how I want to manifest my identity. But sadly, this is the case. However, I am hopeful of better and brighter future. The fact that I was invited today to speak about my story, to share my concerns, is a step forward. And we've got collectively to tackle Islamophobia in the street, but also the institutionalized Islamophobia from different discriminatory laws in this country, like Prevent, which is part of counterterrorism law that asks members of the public to identify undefined signs of extremism. And the definition of extremism is quite nebulous, and these signs are quite undefined. So if a Muslim woman chose to wear the face veil or the hijab, the headscarf, out of a sudden, that can be identified as a sign of extremism. And the Muslim community has been disproportionately targeted through this. So this is an example of an institutional Islamophobia. Another example is Schedule 7, stop and search. Muslims and Asian people, generally speaking, are more likely to be stopped in airport than their white counterparts, almost 13 times more likely to do so. So a lot of us are being racially and religiously profiled in the airport. So this is another example of an institutionalized Islamophobia. So we have to think about it from through a bigger picture and approach the problem holistically. And I think the way forward to tackle that is, number one, raising awareness about the problem, agitating people to take action and make the change. You know, Gandhi said once, be the change you want to see. So the change starts from you and I appreciating the problem and engaging people. And also, like, I don't blame people for having such negative stereotypes and perceptions against Muslims. I mean, a lot of the public have been sadly socially conditioned to accept Islamophobia as the norms. The kind of adjectives are used to describe in the print media to describe Muslims are terrorists, radicals, cleric, Islamists, suicide bombers. So, you know, instantly people in the street, whenever they see Muslim, they think, oh, that's a suicide bomber or that's a terrorist. So the media need to be held accountable for the lies that they're spreading. Another solution is to have a better representation of minorities within the media and politics, better representation for LGBT, for Jews, for Black, for Muslims in Westminster. I mean, speaking from a Muslim perspective, the Muslim population in Britain is about 4.8%. And, you know, according to this percentage, we should have at least, for example, 32 MPs in the House of Commons. And we only have 16 Muslim MPs at the moment. So half of that actually needed to be. But the good news, 8 of the 16 Muslim MPs are women. So I'm really happy to see women, actually more Muslim women in Westminster. But also Muslims are underrepresented in the media. Now, another problem when it comes to tackling Islamophobia, it's the weak legislation. So Muslims are actually not equally protected in the current UK law. And I'm referring specifically to the legislation of incitement to religious and racial hatred, 2006. That this there is a loophole in the current legislation that allows people to walk in the streets saying no more mosques and no more Muslims, that allows Katie Hopkins, for example, to get away with tweets saying the Muslims are here and Ramadan hasn't started yet and look, there are terrorist attacks already happening and so on. She manages to get away with every single tweet against Muslims because of this loophole in the current UK law that does not actually recognise the Muslim community by race, rather by faith. In comparison to the Jews and the Sikh and the Black, they are communities identified by race. They are racial groups. You can trace them back to a single origin. And therefore, they are protected against insult, against the usage of threatening and abusive words, whether you prove the intention of the perpetrator or not. When it comes to Muslim, the story is different. Muslims are identified by faith rather than race, because when you look in the Muslim at the Muslim community, we are not a single race. There are Muslim Black, there are Muslim Asian, Arabs, white, and so on. So we cannot be identified as a race in the current UK law, and therefore Muslims are not protected against the insult and the use of threatening words unless you prove the intention of the perpetrator that he wants to stir up religious hatred. And in fact, none of the perpetrators have been prosecuted under this law, which is really sad. I am all for freedom of speech and everyone has the right to criticize Islam and I support that. But the problem is when you demonize Muslims, you know, and when you alienate them from public life and when you attack them by saying no more mosques or all Muslims are terrorists and things like that. And that's the issue. So the way forward, I believe that we need to lobby our MPs and assembly members in Cardiff to seal this loophole in the current UK law. We need to have better media and political representations of minorities, including Muslims. And we need to have a more accountable media to promote diversity, inclusivity and multiculturalism. There is a general perceptions and stereotype against Muslim women who chose to wear the hijab, the headscarf or the niqab, the face veil. There is general understanding that it's an oppressive symbol and it's preventing women from participating and things like that. But what we have to appreciate that this kind of narrative is is promoted by mostly far-right Islamophobes. In a lot of these discussions, Muslim women are actually not invited to come and explain why they wear it. The face veil or the headscarf has never been an oppressive symbol. I mean, we have seen nuns wearing the headscarf. No one would say that they're oppressed. Why, when it comes to Muslim, out of a sudden they are oppressed, even within that Judaism, some Orthodox Jews, they cover their hair. It's never been an oppressive symbol. I think the most important when it comes to these debates is to actually invite the Muslim women and allow them to speak on their behalf. And a lot of them would say, you know what, it's just an act of worship. You know, God told me to do that and I'm just striving to get closer to him. For me, it's a mean of devotion to God and that's why I'm doing it. Plus, a lot of Muslim women who wears the hijab, the headscarf or the niqab, the face veil, are actually scientists, are politicians, are sport individuals and so on. Personally, I wear the face veil. I am a molecular geneticist and in fact, I'm a skydiver. So I don't know how is it impressive, to be honest. I understand why there are some segments of the society think that Muslims and Islam are inherently evil. And I truly believe that these people are not inherently evil, though they think that I am inherently evil. I just think they have been socially conditioned by the media. And also, there's an interesting thing that Islamophobia, which is a new type of racism, it seems to be gendered in a way, because most of the victims of Islamophobia are actually Muslim women who are visibly Muslim, and most of the perpetrators are white male working class who have been disadvantaged by the system, who their hate and bigotry have been bolstered by austerity and so on, and they want to air their anger against a minority or want to blame minority for all the social and political ills. So I understand where they're coming from and I don't blame them for it. But at the same time, I think education is key. Breaking these stereotypes and perceptions is absolutely key. And also creating a social space of interaction between these individuals is the way forward. Islam, I know that people, I'm just repeating what I say, so it will be easy for you when you edit. So I know that people think that Islam is an evil, destructive religion. But Islam for me means justice. It means devotion. It means for me to be good to my neighbor. It means for me to be an active member of my society, promoting the common good. So if you ask a Muslim in the street, maybe, you know, he would share similar views as mine. Believe me, it's not what the media tells you, it's not what the politicians tell you. And in fact, I know that people have these kind of perceptions also because of, you know, the terrorist groups of ISIS and so on. But is it really fair to blame Muslims for such evil, brutal terrorist groups? And if it's fair, does that mean that you will expect every Christian to apologize for the KKK or every Buddhist for the Dagba and so on? The fact that terrorism has no religion, terrorism is just an ideology that can be practiced by everyone and anyone, sadly. It's nothing to do with faith, it's nothing to do with Muslims. And I must say that every terrorist attack that takes place, you know, I get frightened, first of all, because I know there will be backlash. And it's sad to see. And in fact, like most of the victims of ISIS, for example, are actually Muslims. it's not, you know, Christians or others. You know, we have been, you know, damaged by them more than anyone else, and yet you're blaming me for them too. And the media is very difficult to take.
I asked Sahar, what would she say to British Muslims who may be facing Islamophobia in their lives?
What I would say to Welsh Muslims and British Muslims is, first of all, to be proud of your identity and share it with the world. I know there are a lot of people who are saying Muslims are not integrating and they are isolated and so on. But the truth is, there's a difference between assimilation and integration, and a lot of people are confusing the two. Assimilation is when you assimilate within the bigger component of the society, so much so that you become unrecognizable. And you don't want this to happen to anyone. I'm not talking about Muslims. You know, I want the Jews to be proud of who they are, the LGBT, the Muslims, the Black to be proud of who they are. And I always say to my Muslim followers that be an apologetically Muslim and be proud of who you are. I always say that I'm not only a proud Welsh Muslim, I'm actually a proud Cardiffian.
I then asked Sahar, what are the best organisations to contact if people are in need of help?
If any Muslim faces an Islamophobic incident, the first thing you've got to do is report it. Report it by calling 101, this is the police forces, and they will take it seriously. I know there is a lot of people who don't trust the justice system, or they think the police might not do anything, but it's really important to report this incident by calling 101. If it's emergency, then obviously call 999. The police forces are also keen to tackle the issue, and they want to identify the hotspot of these attacks. So we cannot really show the scale of the problem if you and I don't report this incident. Another way to tackle Islamophobia is to join organizations that focuses on this issue, one of which is Muslim Engagement and Development, for short MEND. Check the website mend.org.uk. There are so many materials in this website in terms of video, in terms of teaching, in terms of training, you know, from tackling anti-Muslim bullying in playground to lobbying to engaging with politicians and media and so on. The way forward is we've got to take action. We've got to make Islamophobia history in our country. So I'm Sahar Al-Faifi. I am a molecular geneticist, a graduate of Cardiff University. I am a Muslim woman who chose to wear the face veil. I am also a skydiver.
Sahar's story shows so much strength. In the face of hatred, she could easily feel pushed away, second class, and yet she is resilient. Instead of taking abuse and letting it wear her down, she stands up, takes action, and is now a campaigner to stop Islamophobia in its tracks. Think Tank Series 2 is recorded and produced by me. Music is by Azir, and you can find more of his wonderful work in the show notes or on our website. Rowan Lees is our Director of Sound. Joe Lovell is our Promotion Coordinator and Assistant Producer. Think Tank is a free and independent podcast available on Apple Podcasts and all other podcast streaming apps. You can find Think Tank on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or go to our new website, thinktankpod.com. I'm Harry Bly. You've been listening to Think Tank Series 2. Think Tank is supported by you, our loyal listeners and supporters on Patreon. We have such an exciting series ahead of us in 2018, including new episodes, mini-series and live shows, and I'm so excited to share it all with you. To support the podcast and get rewards such as our new personalised cassette tapes and other exclusive content, visit patreon.com/thinktankpodcast. Thank you.